Words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be now and always acceptable in your sight, O Lord, for you are our rock and our salvation. Amen.
Amen.
You don't know me. My name is David, and I am the rector of Christ Church in Elbow Park, and I want to begin, hello, by saying thank you to your dean for the gracious invitation both to our choir to sing Evensong this evening, but also to participate and to preach this morning. It's a tremendous honor to be in this beautiful crown jewel of the architectural messages we send about our faith into the future. Now, I should also bring you greetings from the people of Elbow Park, with particular greetings to your dean, whom they hold in deep affection and esteem. And be assured of our continuing prayers for your ministry here, particularly in this time of discernment about how it is that you might reflect Christ in the world in the future. That long list of attributes of grace that are given to us in Galatians are the things that I pray that I might reflect today. I do, however, feel that I should begin with a bit of a disclaimer. Given that you have a dean, an executive archdeacon, and a distinguished honorary of this parish who've all come from Calgary over the Great Divide, I feel I should point out that when any reference to the resemblance between Victoria and heaven inferred by the Gospel or by the second book of Kings is purely coincidental and not necessarily the opinion or the position of the management here at Christ Church or at Christ Church in Elbow Park. Although I must say, this is a beautiful, beautiful place to be. I want to take you to a farm, a little farm somewhere in the general area of Damascus. And on that farm is a young man standing behind two yoked oxen plowing a field, doing his duty with the family responsibilities of provision, doing his duty in the dry heat as they prepare for a new year and planting and God's abundance. I want you to picture that man, though, having difficulty as he's holding on to the plow, looking ahead. The difficulty is, of course, he's not the only plow out there. He is the junior of a long string, a team of 10 or 11 similarly yoked oxen and plows in front of him as they make their way up and down the field, sort of like a biblical version of a great big tractor with an array of discs behind it. It's hard to look ahead. It's hard to see where he's going because of the heat of the day and of the dust. Very tempting, actually, to look back. But he knows that he can't because he will not be faithful nor attend to his duties properly if he does. The young man's name is Elisha. He is the junior member of his family. His place in the array of plowing will tell you this. And as he plows, the most amazing thing happens. Ahead through the dust, he sees a figure approaching. That figure is reaching to take his mantle, to lift it from his own shoulders and to place the mantle on his. Like King David, the humblest of all of them. And yet the great prophet Elijah has chosen him. He, Elisha, will be the one to wear it. Grasping the meaning of what is happening immediately, he is remarkably humbled by what's happened. And he chases after Elijah and asks him for instructions, an explanation, some sense of what might be coming next. Well, now Elijah, for his part, as you'll remember from last week, is exhausted. He has, in essence, tendered his resignation to God. He has done remarkable things, including calling down fire on two groups of 50 soldiers, causing their death because an illegitimate, toxic king has petitioned to someone other than the Lord of Lords for counsel. He is chased by the queen, Jezebel. His life is in danger. And in earthquake, wind, and fire, he has not found the presence of God as he might have in the past, but instead in the still, small voice of calm. Elijah, who's called the widow's son back from death. Elijah, who has eaten holy food and been sustained for a journey of 40 days and 40 nights back to the holy mountain, where he has been given that new sense of God's presence. Elijah, who's been told by that presence to get back to work, to anoint a new king, to rearrange the political situation of the land, has now come to pass the mantle. That's the backstory. Now, interestingly enough, by contrast to the gospel, when he says to Elijah, "I need to go and say goodbye. I need to turn back," he's told to do so. And he does. It doesn't go so well for the oxen, I might add, because he removes the yoke, that yoke that is a parallel to the one that St. Paul invites us not to wear. And in burning the yoke, he sacrifices the oxen and has a feast. He truly is leaving everything behind. Though he has turned back, he is completely committed to that which lies ahead. Which brings us to today's reading. As they cross over, both symbolically and really, the River Jordan, as they cross over that barrier, that other side, Elijah says, "Stay here." And Elisha says, "No, I will not leave you." Because it is in Elijah, of course, that he knows that power, that presence. A second time, Elijah says, "Leave me, stay here, and I will go on ahead." And Elisha says, "I will not leave you, no." He stays persisting to know what it is that Elijah might give him in order that he might shoulder this magnificent responsibility that lies ahead. And so Elijah takes his mantle, rolls it up, and strikes the water, and parts the water that they might pass over this barrier safely together. This echoes beautifully, does it not, with the entire story of the reconciliation of the gap between heaven and earth, the covenant that unfolds and is renewed, as we'll come to in a moment. Crossing over to the other side, he asks for a double share of the power and the spirit that he sees in Elijah. And Elijah says, "You've asked for a very difficult thing." And he watches him as he is taken up in a chariot of fire into heaven. And as they are separated, the mantle falls. Elisha takes the mantle and strikes the water at the bank of the Jordan, asking not for power, asking not for fame or notoriety, but for the very presence of God. And as he strikes the water with his prayer, it is parted over. And he crosses over to the other side to go back into the world and to work and to reflect that reality of which he has indeed been given a double measure. What a marvelous reading to put in context our gospel today. What a marvelous reading as the narrative in Luke that overarches the whole book, the whole gospel, is about that journey to Jerusalem, step by step. And this is a pivotal chapter, the ninth chapter, in which Christ turns and sets his face on that temple, that place, the place where he was presented and sanctified to God's purposes, that place where he spent 3 days as a boy interacting and confounding the temple leaders, that place where he will go again for a very different 3 days with determination and with his face fixed. It's more than just looking. It is about Christ showing us that he is both source and final purpose as we join our purposes with him. You see, like Elijah, like Elisha, we could be a little bit like the disciples who just a week ago were in the previous chapter were arguing about who was going to have the most power and be the greatest. We could be the ones that say we want to invoke God's power and we want to bring down fire on anybody that disagrees with us. But instead, we are reminded that it will not be through any particular piety, method, or gift of our own that God's purposes will be accomplished, but rather the fall of the one who has already accomplished those purposes once and for all in the cross. The invitation is clear that we look forward even when it's dusty and hot and sweaty and determine what it is that we might do to both join our purposes with the one that has already accomplished that great reconciliation by grace and consider how it might be that we as the Church of God might reflect that powerful reality in our time. So may it be in Calgary. So may it be in Victoria, knowing that neither is heaven, but indeed that in both places and throughout the world, we can know heaven by the joy that we reflect in our faith and in love. Thanks be to God.